Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
The big thing on Total Soccer Show, the show where we sink our teeth into a big and important topic in the beautiful game. Today, we turn our attention to the Second City and the Chicago Fire. The Fire have enjoyed a storied history with an MLS Cup win and multiple US Open Cups in the trophy cabinet, and they've shown ambition over the years with star players who've included Hristo Stoichkov, Bastian Schweinsteiger, and current star DP Jordan Shaqiri, known in this parish as the Power Cube. But the Fire hasn't earned a playoff berth since 2017, and this season isn't off to the greatest start either. Today we ask why their fortunes have changed in recent seasons, what kind of problems they faced, and what the future holds. My name's Ryan Bailey. Joining me today to big thing it up, we've got Taylor Rockwell. Hello, Taylor.
Hello, I am nervous.
Okay, don't be nervous. It's okay. We'll hold your hands the whole way.
This is another one of those episodes that could be a book or several books, and also has lots of passionate people who have written many things, talked about this at length. So it feels like if we don't do this justice, we're going to hear about it. So okay. I hope we do. I hope we do, Chicago supporters.
Indeed. Here to help us do justice, Joe Lowry. Hello, Joe.
Hey, Ryan. I'm just glad that Paul Tenorio is too busy writing his book to like listen and give us critical feedback on this episode. So at least we've got one Chicago media figure who like we can sort of push to the side and not worry about the feedback coming from him. Ryan, it's good to see you.
It is indeed good to see you too, Joseph. Should we just get out of the way at the start? Deep dish pizza is trash, right?
Yep. Never had it, but it looks gross.
Good. I think if we wanted to upset any Chicagoans, Taylor, we've already done it in the first couple of minutes.
I mean, I'm already sort of like, you guys are laying it out for yourselves. Like, you make people drink Malort, which tastes like floor cleaner, if floor cleaner were even more disgusting than it is. You call yourself the Second City.
Hello.
You embrace deep dish pizza. I don't know. I just feel like there's some questions that I have for Chicagoans.
Taylor, have you drank floor cleaner? Or
that was going to be my question.
Hello?
I'm just going to assume that Malort tastes worse.
Okay, gotcha. All right, I am now less concerned for your well-being. Thank you.
Okay. Taylor, I suppose my opening gambit here is, why Chicago Fire? Why are we talking about them in particular? Why are they big thing worthy at this point? There are other MLS teams who have middling to low ambition and who may not be on the right track that their fans would hope they are on. So why the Fire?
For a couple of different reasons. The overarching one is basically just that it's a franchise that like literally started as strong as you possibly can, winning MLS Cup, winning US Open Cup in their first year, and had this potential to be an institution, to be one of the like huge teams in Major League Soccer, and then that has fully fallen by the wayside. And so looking at how that has happened, why that has happened, and where they go from here, I think is a conversation worth having. I think also on a personal level, whenever Joe and I do MLS roundups or when Goss is with us, like it feels like inevitably, like I think my question for Joe this week was basically like, Chicago still bad? Like it just feels like a lazy thing. I don't love talking about teams in a lazy way, but it's been the case for so long for Chicago that it's difficult to talk about anything other than that. And even looking at the way their own press, their own media, their own bloggers cover them, I read like five different pieces that all sort of led with like, so I haven't written about the Fire in like 3 weeks or a month, and it's just the same story. It's just depressing. It's just hard to get excited about them. And I think it's worth looking at a team that started so strongly and trying to get to the bottom of how we got here, where even some of their own writers are very not excited to talk about them.
Yeah, Joe, obviously this is a big soccer city, Chicago, you know, dating back to the Chicago Sting, who won a bunch of NASL titles as well. It's kind of sad to see a very loyal and sizable fan base for soccer in that city have the current product that they do.
Yeah, big soccer city and just big city. Like, by all accounts, the Chicago Fire should be a big club in Major League Soccer. They should be a team that is fighting for like global name recognition in the way that the Galaxy have done, in the way that Inter Miami are doing right now, in the way that LAFC, and to a lesser extent, but in different ways, the New York teams have done in their own football group kind of methods. But they're not. Chicago's the third biggest city in the United States. It's diverse in population. Unlike, you know, LA and New York City, there's only one team in Chicago. Like, there are a lot of things going the Fire's way on paper. They have the ingredients. They've attracted, Ryan, as you said, even some notable stars. But the club has really, really struggled to lay out some of their issues very clearly at the top, or at least some of the results from those issues. They have not made the playoffs in six straight seasons. Ryan, you mentioned 2017. That is the most recent time, and they're probably going to make it 7 years in a row this season. They've made the playoffs just once in the last 11 seasons. They haven't made it past the first round of the playoffs since 2009. They are currently 13th in the Eastern Conference. They've allowed more goals than any Eastern Conference team this season. We talked about that on Tuesday. They rehired Frank Klopas, who pops up in all sorts of different spots throughout the Chicago Fire's history, as their manager, after having him as interim for almost an entire season, after letting go of Ezra Hendrickson last season. There are major issues in the front office. The Fire, for me, to put it succinctly, in the year 2024, are at their core a story of an incredible amount of wasted potential.
Wow. Yeah, it's very true. Taylor, take us back then. Was there like a, is there an alternate 1985, to use a Back to the Future terminology here? Did the path get diverted at some point? What's happened to the Fire?
Yes. Founded in 97, as I said, they win inaugural MLS Cup. They win US Open Cup. Manager Bob Bradley, lest we forget. And there's, it's crazy to look at the Fire, like, going back to their founding and just see how many, like, big players, how much talent they have had, how many names in U.S. soccer they have had in that team. The team that goes on to win MLS Cup that year has Zach Thornton in goal. They've got Jesse Marsh, Carlos Bocanegra, Dimo Kovalenko, Peter Novak, Chris Armas, Hristo Stoichkov, Ante Razov, Josh Wolf comes off the bench, as does DeMarcus Beasley. Like, that is a stacked team. It is not surprising that they win it the way they do. And then, to my mind, that's when you have DC United being the dominant team in the East and in Major League Soccer. And growing up as a DC fan, Chicago were a team I feared because they were so good and came out of nowhere and just knocked DC off their perch a little bit. And that was what Chicago were. They were a really difficult team that had a bunch of talent, but were also going to be fighters if they needed to be, sometimes literally. And they have a super strong start. I've already talked about the silverware, but they make the playoffs up until 2004. That's the first time they missed the playoffs. So to be an expansion team and then kind of hit the ground running the way they did is not a, like, not a feat that many can replicate. And then they start making decisions that I think lead them to a breaking point of sorts, beginning with the dismissal of Peter Wilt, who remains an incredibly popular figure in U.S. soccer, especially for independent teams and for lower leagues. He is also just a very nice guy who will show up at soccer events and happy to talk to anybody, but is a big brain when it comes to U.S. soccer. And parting ways with him, I think largely a surprise. Maybe in retrospect, some of it can be pointed from the brokering of the Bridgeview deal, which sees the Fire move away from Soldier Field in Chicago, downtown Chicago, to Toyota Park in Bridgeview, which is about 30 minutes outside of Chicago. But I think also just did a ton for soccer in Chicago, continues to do a ton for soccer in Chicago, Peter Wilt. But you get more and more sort of tension building, especially once you have Andrew Hauptmann come in and takes over AEG's controlling interest. Joe, do you want to pick it up from there?
Yeah, I'll happily pick it up. So the Fire obviously have a lot of early success. Taylor, you walked through a lot of their squad. One quick Peter Wilt nugget while we're in there. You mentioned some of the names on that 98 team and some folks that have been around the game for a really, really long time. Marsh, Armas, Novak, Frank Klopas, Ante Razov, Josh Wolf, coached by Bob Bradley. All those names, right? We've run through those. Josh Wolf, there's a fun Josh Wolf tie-in here. A nice little laminated tie-in from 98. Apparently Peter Wilt, who was the GM for the Fire in their early years, clipped a Soccer America article, the legends at Soccer America, with their experts' predictions, and only one of them had the Fire making the playoffs. I love the tie of Peter Wilt, who had helped build a roster that had Josh Wolf on it, cutting out expert predictions and posting them somewhere, like waving the piece of paper, and Josh Wolf 20-plus years later doing the exact same thing with his team in Austin.
Like, nothing's changed.
Nothing's changed. This is a Chicago Fire team early on that had a lot of very important figures in the American soccer landscape and had found a lot of really strong American talent, a lot of strong talent from Europe. They had done a good job of building those early squads. Granted, it was a little easier at the time to stand out in Major League Soccer because the bar was lower, the talent level was lower, there were fewer teams, there were still questions about, hey, is MLS going to exist the next season? There are all sorts of those problems, and at the time, the Galaxy are owned by Anschutz Entertainment Group. They're owned by AEG, the organization that still owns the LA Galaxy, and they owned a lot of teams, along with the Hunts. Like, this was an era, maybe some folks have heard of this era, where a few very, very wealthy individuals propped up basically all of Major League Soccer because the league was not in a good place, there was not a lot of interest, things were not being especially well run, and AEG was one of those ownership groups that had everything really under their wing along with the Hunts. There was a time when they had six clubs and the Lamar Hunt group had three. So they were doing a lot of heavy lifting here, AEG, and the Fire were one of their teams. I was chatting with Timothy Holtz, who does great Fire coverage in the Discord. The Sing Electric is his name in the Discord. Great Fire coverage out in the Chicago landscape as well. And he made the point to me that the Fire were very clearly the second team in the AEG umbrella after the LA Galaxy. And as the Galaxy start to gain steam, suddenly the Fire are maybe not quite so interested and or not quite so interesting to their owners. And eventually this leads to a sale. So they get sold to Andrew Hopman and a slightly larger group around him called Andel Holdings back in 2007. And again, Timothy made this point to me. The Fire's last hardware was in 2006. The DP rule came into effect for the 2007 season. Not really a coincidence. That's a direct quote. You have that ownership sale right around the time when the DP rule comes in. David Beckham is in Major League Soccer. And at that point, truly everything changes for MLS, where spending is different. The league is, it now has different aspirations that were not possible before David Beckham helped raise the profile of the league, even if that was not an initial success in terms of the Galaxy's play on the field and David Beckham's contributions. The Fire, all of a sudden, went from being a team that was sort of an upstart in Major League Soccer, lots of talent, to slowly becoming the second fiddle and further down the depth chart for AEG, to being sold to an owner that did not have a ton of financial resources in Andrew Hopman. And if you don't have the money to put together a good squad in an era of Major League Soccer that allows more spending and more differentiation than the era that came before it, like, you're not in MLS 1.0 anymore. All of a sudden, there are some more stakes at the table, and the Fire under Hopman did not seem willing or capable of playing with the big boys.
Yeah, and I think the timeline here can get murky, and it's important to make some distinctions because, like, if you just look at 2007, you see it as like, oh, new ownership comes in, Hauptmann takes over, they've got Juan Carlos Osorio as manager, they've got Cuauhtémoc Blanco, like, oh, wow, he's making really smart decisions, this is going to be an exciting thing, until you remember that Blanco comes in April, Juan Carlos Osorio appointed in January. So those are still from the AEG days.
Yep.
So, like, that's where the money is still being spent. That's where they are still trying to make exciting signings. And I feel sort of like that is a pretty big tipping point for me. And, like, looking at them and seeing that they lure Juan Carlos Osorio away from Millonarios in Colombia to come there and manage and be successful. And then he gets sort of wooed by the Metro Stars, who end up getting some penalties for that. But you start to see the Fire make these moves, then they have the ownership sale, and then the wheels kind of come off really quickly, and they're still an existing squad. Blanco is elevating, they're making the playoffs, but I think that is the start of the downturn right there.
So, Taylor, it feels like we can categorize the Fire's history into different eras of ownership, to use the Taylor Swift parlance. Have they got progressively worse, or are we undulating?
Both. I mean, I think under Hauptmann, who is maybe the least popular figure in Chicago soccer. I don't know, Joe. It seems like you could hold an election for least popular figure, and there'd be a few different nominees. But I don't want to steal Joe's sort of categorization.
Yeah,
here,
I can categorize real quick, and then Taylor, you can fill in a little bit around this. This is from thinking more and more about this team and chatting with folks about them yesterday, doing prep for today's show. I sort of imagine them in three eras. The first era is the Fire didn't spend, but no one in MLS spends because there's no DP rule, not formally anyway, but we're good, right? Assembled good rosters, seem to do things at a pretty high level early on. Then you inch closer and closer towards that sale from AEG to Andrew Hopman, ownership change. Now the Fire aren't really spending and aren't getting results as the league starts to become a bit more professional in how they go about things and how the money is used inside of Major League Soccer. And then there's a third era, which is fast forwarding quite a bit, but Joe Mansueto takes hold of this team in 2019, I believe it was. He bought in 2018 and fully bought the club in September of 2019. And Mansueto's been willing to spend. Like, he'll drop money in a way that the Fire did not see under Andrew Hopman, and didn't see, obviously, under AEG in the early days of this league either. The Chicago Fire just broke their club transfer record to sign Hugo Kuypers over the offseason. They paid $12 million for him. It's one of the richest MLS transfers ever. They signed Zerdan Shaqiri. They've gone out and tried to bring in resources into this club. They've just done it at a very, very poor level. So now, the third era, the one we're in, is they'll spend money. They're happy to do it. They were sixth in salary spend last year, but they just spent it on the wrong people. And all of a sudden, they're still cellar dwellers in the East.
So good, not spending.
Yep.
Parentheses, because don't need to. Bad, not spending. Bad, but spending. They're your
yep.
three.
Those are the three eras for the Fire.
Yeah. And it's interesting to me in looking at this again that in my notes, it is very much like 2007, takeover. December 2007, Osorio resigns. 2010, Fire failed to qualify for the playoffs. 2015, Nelson Rodriguez named sporting director. 2019, Mansueto takes over. Like, that timeline is indicative of not a lot of success, not winning much. Like making some runs in the U.S. Open Cup, but not winning anything, obviously. And I think right there you can see that they sort of start to fall into anonymity of sorts, that they should be a bigger team. They have been a bigger team in the past, but they're not spending. They're not being competitive. Fan base is still there, but you also are getting in that move to a different stadium 30 minutes outside of downtown. The fan base changes. I think who the ownership is pursuing as fans changes a little bit, and where they are sort of doing their marketing in Chicago, how they're being competitive in Chicago kind of falls off a little bit. And so there's also cracks occurring in the fan base in terms of the loyalty that exists there. And I think that then is something that Mansueto seeks to correct, but I don't feel like they have done that particularly well in any step along the way.
All right, well, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, Taylor, we'll dig into that a little bit more and look at some of the front office decisions, some of the decisions on field as well. Back shortly.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more. This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back to The Big Thing. We're talking all things Chicago Fire. So, Joe, in the current ownership era, we've got ownership that does spend, but perhaps not well. So that makes it a front office issue? Is that fair to say?
That's absolutely how I would categorize it. There are a lot of issues still surrounding the Fire, and maybe we'll talk a bit more about their stadium situation, some of the other decisions that have been made as a club, some public-facing decisions. But a lot of this for me, and you look at the Fire's current struggles, not making the playoffs since 2017, a lot of this for me boils down to who is making the roster decisions. We've seen plenty of different managers come in. Rafael Vicky, we've seen Ezra Hendrickson, we've seen Frank Klopas now still in charge of this team. And it feels like they're all just kind of in the same boat because even though the Fire spend, they have not spent in very wise ways. So it's the end of 2019. That Georg Heitz is hired as the sporting director and Sebastian Peltzer is hired as the technical director. Both of those folks are still employed. Both of those folks had new contracts extended to them and signed over this most recent offseason after, again, being closer to the bottom of the Eastern Conference than the top and closer to the bottom than the playoff line quite a bit since they've been around, never making the postseason, rarely, if ever, putting an inspired group of players out on the field together. That those two are still employed and were given new deals is, I'm not trying to be hyperbolic, one of the most insane things that exists in a very, very insane league that is Major League Soccer. It is beyond reason, truly, in any objective sense, that those two were brought back. I have heard stories, some of which I'm not in position to relay here, but Heitz does not seem to have an incredible grasp of the game and of the players that he signs. You go through and you look at the designated players that have been brought to Chicago. These are oftentimes, right or wrong in terms of how they're built, the players that determine the success of your team, or at least the ceiling of your team. Hugo Kuiper's The Jury is certainly still out there as no one to provide him service because Zerdan Shaqiri has been a massive flop. Although, I want to preface this by saying, not one that I, like, really blame The Fire for going out and taking a swing on. I thought that could be a really fun move, but it just hasn't worked out, man. The guy's been here since 2022. He has not been productive. He's still somehow productive with Switzerland, very much not so with The Fire. Maybe there's a Fire problem there. To quickly run through a few others.
Jump in really fast, because I think it's worth noting, because Heitze has an existing relationship with Shaqiri, right? Going back to the Basel days, or is that the
I believe there's a Swiss connection there, absolutely.
Yeah, so I think even there, like, I totally agree with you that Shaqiri makes a lot of sense and ticks a lot of boxes. It's just also then knowing it doesn't work out and knowing that it's sort of dependent on that existing relationship, even there, it's like, okay, so that wasn't even that fully ambitious. They weren't really showing that they were doing interesting things. It was more like, hey, I know this guy who used to be really good when he was younger. He's still really good. I have a connection. Let's make that happen. Like, it's more network than it is aspirational in my mind.
I think that's a fair point, Taylor. Like, you look at these players. Gaston Jimenez is still a Chicago Fire player, was signed as a DP, like, is just not a very good soccer player. You look at Ignacio Alessandri. Like, you can run through the list of basically every DP that Garrick Heights has been in charge of the club as they've signed, and it is flop.
I would say literally. Flop. Literally every. Yeah.
I think Hugo Kuipers is a legitimately very, very good number nine, was producing at a high level in Belgium. But then this dives a layer deeper than just the talent ID. It's the roster construction process. Right. Like, there's no one to feed him. There's no one to give him the ball. Brian Gutierrez is a fun player. The academy is an exciting part of the Chicago Fire's otherwise, you know, bleak sort of existence right now. Gutierrez is not a primary creator in Major League Soccer. None of their wingers are at that level. Shaqiri isn't hit. Like, it's just miss after miss. And this is the biggest thing that I have on Mansueto. Like, it is hard to find owners that will spend at the level that he does. He is willing to go out there and break the bank. Like, there was reporting from Tom Bogert and others over the offseason that the Fire were looking for a DP, and they were perfectly happy to break not just the Fire transfer record, but to break the MLS transfer record, to go out there and get a great player who would tear up Major League Soccer and would be must-watch. Hugo Kuipers isn't necessarily that player. They couldn't find the guy that they wanted. They've still got one more DP spot for the summer. This team will be better after the summer than they are right now. There's no doubt about that. But you look at this team, Mansueto has put money into it, but he has put it into the absolute worst areas when it comes to their actual roster. That's his flaw. It's not that he's not willing to spend. He absolutely is. It's hard to find those people. He is a silver lining still, in my view, for the Fire. But to go out there and continue to trust a couple of people in Heitz and Peltzer who don't seem to be able to put together good squads is doing nothing for the Fire right now.
Taylor, can we turn our attention to the stadium issue, moving in and out of the Bears stadium, going to a soccer-specific stadium? How has that affected the team over the years? And is there a desire to go back to a soccer-specific stadium?
I'm not sure about that last part. I think people would just be happy to go to a stadium where there's a team that wins games. I think that would be a big part of building an atmosphere. But the move to Bridgeview, I remember being excited about that sort of as a neutral, because that was in the era of everyone's playing in sort of quarter full NFL stadiums. And so the shift towards soccer specific was still like relatively new in my mind at that point. And so that seemed like a positive thing. I think for a lot of the old school original supporters of the Chicago Fire, that did feel a little bit like moving away from, like literally moving away from them. I mean, you're moving 30 minutes away, public transport is less available. I think it felt like for some people living in downtown, that's not really the team that we identified with. Maybe that's less of a priority as there are other professional franchises that you can continue to see much more readily, much more easily, and in some cases, much more successfully when it comes to the on-field result. So it feels a little bit like the Fire became somewhat of an afterthought in Chicago itself, even though they're still playing there. Then they leave Bridgeview to go back to Soldier Field after Mansueto takes over. And there's a feeling then that, like, that new fan base that was sort of established has now been left behind. So neither one particularly thrilled. I think there were also concerns about the actual playing surface at Bridgeview. Now, maybe that was a little bit more drummed up to generate some of the interest in moving. Who knows? But either way, you have sort of a dissatisfied fan base already, and then you get the rebrand that dissatisfied, I think, like, literally everyone except for the people who decided it needed to happen. That's one of the more universally loathed rebrands I've seen. Like, maybe Leeds and maybe Cardiff are the two comparisons I would draw in terms of how unpopular they were.
So how did that go down, Taylor? Can you tell us about that? Obviously, the Leeds and the Cardiff ones didn't Well, no, neither happened, did they? The Cardiff one didn't happen either. So
no, it did. It did. Vincent Kennedy, he like changed the colors and changed the crest and moved them
didn't
away.
Didn't they change it back?
Yes, exactly. Eventually yeah. they changed okay. it back, as did the fire. But yeah, they get rid of the kind of original branding. They move in with a sort of like the resurgent Chicago after the fire. But like I love how it was like tone deaf enough that even concerns about having crossover with the Latin Kings, I think it was, or maybe the Gangster Disciples, one or the other, that there's like some commonality in that brand, in that logo. But it's just also changing the colors, changing the history of the team, and doing so to create a fairly, like, they designed a camel. They designed a horse by consensus, basically. Like, it just, it doesn't have much identifiable. It doesn't show much character. You change the club colors at the same time, so now the fire are wearing blue, which I guess is how you extinguish a fire. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense, and it immediately seems to me to indicate that this ownership group is tone deaf, and the decision makers aren't really incorporating what the fan base wants or what the fan base cares about. And so it's just another one where now, on top of the two groups sort of feeling not really included or sort of left behind, now they're being literally told, like, now we're changing your history, don't worry about it, we don't really much focus on your tradition. And so I think everybody just gets very frustrated by the way things are happening in Chicago. And though the decision makers at the time said, we're sticking with it, change is always unpopular, but, you know, we expect this to become a recognized brand and an institution in the league, I think they change it midway through the next season to something more similar to the original branding, not back to it, but something that incorporates it a little bit more.
Wow, that's an awkward backtrack for any ownership to have to do, isn't it?
Yes,
and
yes.
You
can pry the new logo out of my cold dead hands. Never mind, here it is. Never mind, we're gonna change it right away. Sorry about
please
that.
Please buy our shirts. Please buy
exactly,
them. We'll change
basically.
Them back.
And that's the thing is, like, even there, it doesn't feel sorry, right? It doesn't feel even then like it's a we've heard you. We got this wrong. Here's what you all are asking for. We're going to make this change. We want to reflect the people who are going to come to these games, the people who are supporting us. It feels like a year later, like you guys aren't selling stuff and people are still kind of annoyed and the team is bad. Okay, I guess we'll change it. Like it's still even there feels tone deaf at best and maybe like cynical and calculated at worst. And I'm not sure either one of those things are good, especially for an ownership group that, as Joe said, is spending money and could be seen as the ones turning it around and restoring traditions and making things better. Instead, it just feels like they're just kind of throwing out money and then continuing to appoint people who maybe don't justify that money.
Mm, yeah. By the way, blue does put out fire. I can confirm that, Taylor. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Also,
if you just
Gatorade
throw like
flavor,
blue colored paper on there,
yeah,
I think,
just blue.
Just anything blue. Yeah, it works fine.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's right. Joe, any perspective on the stadium moving that this team has done and how it may have potentially alienated fan bases and maybe even, you know, playing surfaces even affecting performance, playing in relatively empty NFL stadiums, coming back to that? Is that a thing to consider?
It's not good. I'll tell you that much. Like being at Soldier Field, basically up until 2006, there was a little bit of a nomadic era in there where they were playing at a college because Soldier Field was being renovated. So they were mostly in Soldier Field for the first era. They go to Bridgeview. I like the idea, Taylor, as you said, the soccer-specific stadium is a nice feel. It's just not a good location. It's not a good situation. There was a whole public funding mess surrounding all that stuff where taxes got raised. It did not, as far as I can tell, garner a lot of positive sentiment from the community. Just really, really messy all the way along. And then you end up, while you're at Bridgeview in 2019, the Fire had the lowest attendance in MLS with 12,000 people come to their home games on average. Like, that's atrocious for a team in Major League Soccer, even 5 years ago. Then go back to Soldier Field, and well, along the way, because you've been bad for, you know, a really, really long time, and because you've gone back and forth and back and forth, and it feels like that Michael Scott snip, snip, snap, snaps, like GIF from The Office, right? Like, all of a sudden, now you're back in Soldier Field. And
do you understand the physical toll that changing stadiums takes on a person? Who's there?
You watch a Chicago Fire game, and I have greater beef with, like, the broadcasts look a lot better now with Apple than they did before. Like, the color grading on a lot of them, still not all the way there. You watch a home game for the Fire, and it just looks... It honestly doesn't look like something that you want to watch as a neutral, both because you know that you're not going to get a positive experience when you actually watch the players and the ball move around on the field, and because it just looks clunky. Like, it is a bad situation. It's not It's not at the level where Atlanta United and the Sounders, and maybe you could rope Charlotte into that category because it feels like the fan base there is still showing up for games. Like, that's not really the experience for the Fire right now, and moving so often has a huge part in that. I don't necessarily blame some of the things that they tried to do, but they all flopped. I don't blame Mansueto for trying to put roster money into the squad. It hasn't hit, and all of a sudden you're left with just this big, giant pile of ill will among, you know, fans that maybe had been interested, and like lack of success, and it all builds to this really ugly little package.
Oh dear, oh dear. Maybe some more color grading can help that experience of looking,
yes,
making this.
Do it. I'm not. I know you're joking. I am not, to be clear.
Taylor, can we talk about on-field issues? What's going on in that respect, in terms of the coaches, in terms of player recruitment? From my perspective, sitting here in North Carolina, I noticed that Chicago didn't win the World Cup with Bastian Schweinsteiger.
I know. Like,
need to have some more impactful players.
Yet. They didn't win it yet. Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think Joe laid out a lot of the issues when it comes to their pursuit of designated players, where they have spent that money, and the lack of return on that investment. To my understanding, that also extends to the next level of players that sometimes they are hitting, but it's difficult to point to major success stories. I think, like, a few different articles I read combined have like 3 to 4 players that you could say were like acquired in that next tier range that have had success. Largely, it's been players who aren't hitting, who have then been sold on, who are there for a year or two, and then sold or let go or traded or whatever it may be. So it doesn't feel like you've had consistency in the squad. You've had young players and academy players develop, and you've had some come through and come good, but then be sold on. John Duran and Gabriel Slonina, chief on that list. And so that's maybe a positive, but simultaneously a negative, because you've got really exciting youngsters that you could build around, but if you want to sell them and make that money, you're going to do that, and the Fire have done that. And then, to rehash what Joe already laid out, the firing of Ezra Hendrickson and the appointment of Frank Klopas as an interim manager for the remainder of the season, with the express purpose, as I read it, to allow them to conduct a lengthy coaching search, explore all options, and really turn over like that manager that's going to allow them to elevate and become that next level team, and then at the end of the season to appoint the interim manager on a full-time basis. An interim manager who missed the playoffs after losing the final 2 games. And even there, it was a very narrow hope. But even that couldn't really inspire them to win those games, to make it to the playoffs. And so I think if you're a Fire fan, there are just so many pieces I saw about, like, it's okay if you're a Fire fan to stop going to games. At a certain point, like, you have to jump ship. And there are still very loyal supporters who still go to games and still really care about this team. But when they're hiring Frank Klopas as a permanent manager, who has been an important person and a savior for the Fire at certain points in their history, but at this point is not the one who's going to reimagine this team or move them forward. It feels a little bit like treading water at best. And when you're reappointing Heights, it feels like it's kind of a lot of the same things repeating, with sort of inexplicable explanations for why that's occurring.
Joe, how about the way in which these players are being deployed on the field, the tactics, the setups? Does that have a key effect for you? Obviously it does, because that's how they try to win games.
it plays a part, for sure. I look at this team, and I've talked about this with other clubs like the Rapids earlier on this season, when it didn't feel like maybe they were going in any specific stylistic direction. When you don't have elite talent, and Chicago don't have elite talent right now, they have some very talented players. As a roster, they are towards the bottom end in terms of overall talent relative to other teams in MLS. When you don't have a really, really good squad, you need to look somewhere else to find a differentiating factor that can help push you towards success. And the Fire, with how they play, don't do that. They have not differentiated themselves whatsoever tactically. They are a milquetoast 4-2-3-1 team, where it doesn't really look like Frank Klopas has a lot of ideas on how he wants to play. They're a little under middle of the pack in terms of possession. They don't create a ton of chances. They're set up, I think, with a roster and their wingers and Kuipers to be able to go a bit more direct, because they don't have the quality to always influence the game in possession. But you go and watch this team, sure, they're direct at times, but man, they are slow as molasses to transition in other moments. So it all ties into a really, really disappointing on-field product. If you don't have the players, suddenly the tactics become even more important. And when you're not really trying to change the game, or at least it's not working to change games and differentiate yourself to, hey, maybe we're going to go and impress and create chances that way, or hey, maybe we're going to lean into these detailed possession principles. Like, we want to eliminate the kinds of mistakes that happen when everybody isn't on the same page. the Fire don't have that overall like universal tactical approach that unites all the players. There's a lot of redundant spacing. There's a lot of poor passes. There's a lot of slow tempo with the ball, without the ball, mistimed pressing triggers, all that stuff. They don't appear to me to be a terribly well-coached team, which is, you know, always something helpful to have on your side when you have a manager who seems to know what they're doing, but matters so much more when you don't have a really strong group of players to fall back on.
Yeah, it leads to a scenario, like, I kept picturing as I was reading, like, the movie Major League, which even there has, like, an owner who is actively trying to sabotage the team. But in this case, it feels like an organization that is spending money but isn't really putting out much of a product. It's a manager who isn't elevating those players to anything other than what they are. And so you have a fan base that shows up like hoping something will click, and it kind of feels like that's what the owner is also going for as well. Is like, hopefully this season? No? All right, well, then we'll see what happens next season. And it feels like if something were to happen, it's very much lightning in a bottle versus an intentional plan, at least at time of recording. Maybe that changes going forward.
Maybe it will change going forward, Taylor. Let's take a break and look to see what the future holds for this team. Taylor's nodding his head saying, yes, everything's going to be great for Chicago.
Something like that.
Just so you know. We'll be back very shortly.
Hey, folks. This is Taylor from the Total Soccer Show, reminding you that we are inching ever closer to the start of the summer transfer window, which means there are teams that will buy and sell their players early, there are teams that will leave that business very late, and there are teams that will operate in between. But no matter what, it's going to be a chaotic situation. There's going to be offers coming through willy-nilly. There's going to be transactions to be tracked and processed and make sure that enough money is there. There's going to be probably angry clubs calling to complain. There are many things to deal with. And unfortunately for those clubs, there is no sort of business tool that makes things easier, makes transactions simpler, gets the business done efficiently and effectively. But for the small businesses around the globe, there is such a service, Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're auctioning autographed apparel or selling sleek kits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And I really appreciate that about Shopify. No matter how big you are, no matter how fast you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify's the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. That's as many countries as we'll be selling players in the transfer window this summer. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/TSS, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/TSS.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back to The Big Thing. We're talking all things Chicago Fire. Taylor, we've looked to the past. Now let's look ahead. Let's put those rearview mirrors away for a second. This team has had one playoff berth since 2012. It seems statistically unlikely that that trend continues given the nature of playoffs in MLS these days.
And yet.
Yeah. What do you think? It feels like the only way is up for this team at this point. So is it going to go up?
I don't know. And that is an insane thing to say, because when you have Nelson Rodriguez like making decisions, it doesn't feel like that was stable, putting it mildly, that there were a lot of sort of questionable acquisitions, questionable strategies, questionable decisions, and maybe a little bit of feeling that like the Fire will take the bait. If you're trying to bait them into a move or you're trying to get a trade that's favorable to you, the Fire might take that one. And so you would assume that then them spending money and having different people around, although I think Rodriguez has been there or continues to be there, you would think that there would be then this uptick. And instead, they've spent like over $40 million at least on players. I think some of the numbers I saw were They've come close to around $100 million on salaries during the Heights era, and yet they haven't really had much to show for it. So renewing him doesn't feel like a step in the right direction. It feels like a step in the same direction. So I don't, again, I don't feel like then they're setting themselves up for a, this is a logical build. We are creating something that will endure, that will allow us to be successful for a decade. It feels sort of like they are continuing with what Mansueto likes or the people that he likes at the expense of the performance on the field. Joe, maybe at this point it's worth talking about like infrastructure improvements and academy improvements, because that does feel like maybe if you're a Fire fan, it's an area where you could at least have some optimism.
Yeah, totally. And one quick thing on where you were talking there, Taylor. It is not a logical build as it relates to the first team roster and the decision-making that goes into that. We are waiting, Chicago Fire fans are waiting, for some unexpected event to completely change the trajectory of this team. Mansueto, by all accounts, is going to continue to spend. By all accounts, he's also going to rely on his guys and Garrett Keitz and like that front office that he seems to quite like, regardless of how bad the team is along the way. Mansueto bought FC Lugano in Switzerland, which is another positive in that they have another club to share resources with. Like I think that's a useful thing. They have not used it well, the Fire. It hasn't really been something that's boosted their quality. But Heitz is also involved over there, and he's really, really involved across the board in this organization. It's going to be hard, apparently, for Mansueto to remove himself or his emotions. I don't feel like I have a great read on why this is happening, other than that there is a bond there. And it seems to me that there's going to have to be some event that shakes that bond up and allows Mansueto to move on to find someone else to run this team. So that's the first team side. I'll kind of tie a bow on that as far as my perspective on all this. There are some exciting things happening with the Fire. A handful, actually, of really, really positive things. They're building a training facility in the city, $90 million funded by Mansueto and the Fire, 23 acres, like actually in Chicago, as I mentioned. That's a real positive. And I think one of the biggest things, and you can talk to folks around the game, not just in the U.S., but Europe, one of the things that everybody feels like MLS is doing at not just a good level, not just an elite level on this side of the Atlantic, but an elite level period, is building facilities, like having places that players want to be, having quality amenities, having things that look nice and are fun to be in. And those things really do draw players. They draw coaches, they draw talent. The Fire are doing that. They're trying to build out this club to be more than just a team, but to be an organization. And Mansueto deserves credit for that. The Fire deserve credit for that. I mentioned the Lugano tie. Having another team in Europe, like that is something that you can use. That is not something that very many teams in MLS have access to. Between the Lugano connection, which, again, we're still sort of waiting to see maybe if that's going to turn into something as far as it relates to the first team. The Academy turning out, like, legit good players. Maybe not certain U.S. men's national team players, but guys that can contribute to the first team, guys that can make them a little bit of money in a transfer sale. You look at Gaga Slonina, Chris Brady could have a similar trajectory if he wants it. There are positives here. It's just hard to envision those positives making a huge impact on a consistent basis as it relates to the actual on-field product.
So, Joe, it feels like there's some positives here in terms of infrastructure, in terms of intention. There's money to be spent. Yep. Let's pretend for a second we are vastly overpaid management consultants, the three of us. Let's go into Chicago. Let's lay out a plan, an action plan of things that this team can do to start turning things around. Where do you think you would start that action plan?
Yeah, the first step for me, and Taylor, I'm fascinated to hear your perspective on this, is go find a chief soccer officer inside of Major League Soccer. Go find someone who is very good at their job. And unfortunately, move on from George Heitz. I have nothing against him as a person. Move on from that.
Having
start
just
a new era.
Yeah.
Which, again, that's why we're in this hypothetical scenario where I'm sipping a mimosa on the beach making all these phone calls. Like, go get
this management consultancy sounds like a lot of fun, by the way, Joe.
You painted a nice picture, Ryan. I'm just carrying the ball downfield. Like, go get Garth Lagerwey. Go get Chris Albright. Go get somebody.
Tim Bezbachenko who knows the one that I keep hearing. Is like,
absolutely.
Make him a ridiculous offer. Pay whatever it takes to get him. Give him the money that you're giving already, and you will have a team that is like a dynasty in this league.
And that's the thing. Like, Garth Lagerwey would have been amazing. And he ends up going to Atlanta, and he's going to, I think, do very, very well there after being good with Seattle, being in the RSL organization. Go find somebody who has a proven track record of building squads that make sense, building good teams that fit together on the field. Like, that is, I honestly believe, maybe this is me being naive and there's a lot more work to do in the community and among the fans. That's where I want to hear your perspective, Taylor. Like, I honestly believe that one or two simple changes at the top of the front office get you so much further towards where you want to be and so much closer to where you were way back in 1998, it just is bleak because it doesn't feel like we're going to get those moves anytime soon.
You know, I think hiring a person who can run the front office, who has a vision and a plan and a proven track record, gets immediate goodwill. And I think there is a loyalty for Chicago Fire supporters for sure. And there's an enthusiasm for this team when they're not historically bad, so always. And so I think bringing in somebody who can make those decisions and sort of immediately create a little bit of enthusiasm, I think it also buys you time. If you're bringing in a new GM, like, I think you can then say, this is the start of moves. It's going to be a two-year process until we're at a point where we feel like we are consistently competing to make the playoffs. And then after 3 years, we're hoping to be a team that's consistently competing for a home playoff berth or whatever it may be. I think you'll get buy-in. I think people will be okay with that because it's just been so unpredictable but also predictably bad at the same time for so long that I think any sort of very significant positive developments in the training facility is one of those, I think would get people back excited. I think bringing through a manager who also like has at least some track record of success in Major League Soccer or is young and exciting but doesn't feel like a full-on roll of the dice. Like Rafael Vicky felt like a roll of the dice, like didn't have a huge amount of experience. It is another one who I think failed to get the U-17 national team, the U.S. men's team, to win a game at the U-17 World Cup, and that's a team that had Gio Reyna, Ricardo Pepi, Busio, Scali, to name a few.
Those are kids. Let's not read too much into U-17 World Cup results.
But he also saw FC Basel's, like, the end of their sort of dominance in the Swiss League. It doesn't feel like a guy that you look at and think, that's the one who knows how to speak to the youth and, like, lead the way to silverware. So I can see how you could look for a younger manager or an exciting manager or somebody who feels like they could be the up-and-comer, but I think you also want to balance that with experience and expertise so that you have a person running the front office who's giving a coach good players and exciting players and spending the budget wisely. And then at the same time, you want a manager who's going to put out an exciting team that plays exciting soccer and has proactive ideas for how to score goals and how to kind of generate interest and maybe get some designated players who aren't going to leave after a year or two never scoring a goal or an assist. And I think they've got a couple of those who have done just that. So I think it's sort of obvious stuff, but at the same time, it doesn't seem to have been obvious in Chicago for quite some time.
In that sense, Taylor, it's occurred to me that Chicago Fire might be MLS Man United. Second city, have lots of money to spend but hasn't necessarily been spent very well over the years. And as Joe says, just need a few tweaks and the right people at the very top to change the direction, to change the culture. There's some comparisons there.
And even when they do spend money, it doesn't seem to have much of an impact and is maybe misspent in the wrong areas. Yeah, no, I hate that, but yeah. I mean, at least Manchester United are still... The only thing I would say that maybe refutes that is just Manchester United are still, like, okay. They're still mid-table. They're still occasionally in the Champions League or in Europa League or going to the FA Cup final, I guess. Fire. Nope, not recently have they been to a
Who's more embarrassing there, Taylor?
What's up?
Who's more embarrassing out of those two teams? That's the question.
It was Manchester United. It might be with the amount of money they've spent, the Fire, at this point. Yeah. And just for, like, moves that made sense, and then the way they, like, even the Schweinsteiger thing, this is unfair, but it's just is kind of the reality for me, is like, what do we remember about Bastian Schweinsteiger in Chicago? And I feel like most people will tell you that time that the journalist asked him if they would win the World Cup. Like, outside of that, do you guys remember Bastian Schweinsteiger playing
for
them?
No, and it's not unfair because the team was bad.
Yeah.
Like all this stuff is completely fair as it relates to bashing the Fire. The team wasn't memorable. Bastian Schweinsteiger's time in Major League Soccer wasn't as memorable as it should have been because the pieces around him, and even some of that's before the Heights era, but like you still see remnants of the mismanagement that has been a part of this club for such a long time. It's a huge flaw. It is mind-boggling to me that Heights and Peltzer were brought back in the offseason. It is, I cannot understand it. I will not understand it. There is no reason that this club should not go out there. Like why are the two teams in Ohio bigger than the Fire? Why are the two teams in Ohio?
Nothing against Ohio.
Like, why is FC Cincinnati?
Yeah.
Why do they get it and the Fire don't get it? Why did the Columbus Crew go out there and get someone in Bezbachenko who can lead their front office and lead their organization and go out there and hire a dynamic, exciting manager in Wilfred Nancy? Why are these clubs doing it and the Fire are willing to outspend all of them? Like, the Fire are willing to outspend anybody in Major League Soccer. And yet, they continue to roll with the mediocrity, worse than that, that they have running the actual soccer part of the organization. It's ridiculous.
It is, and especially with the leg up that they had, because going back to the original start of this show, like, Joe, you laid out the teams that have kind of become more institutions or become more consistently successful, or more recently have become like the team in Major League Soccer in the form of Inter Miami, but that's a team that has been an expansion team since the Fire have been around. LAFC have come on since the Fire have been around. Like, the Galaxy have been there, but in different iterations. It just feels like there was an opportunity to keep building and keep growing and to be this ever-present fixture. And instead, they've been that. It's just an ever-present fixture at the bottom of the table, which is certainly not where they expected to be when they came into the league.
All right. Well, there you go. I think we have big thinged for this episode. Joe, congratulations. You've earned us the management consultant gig there. Money, yeah, please, yes. Chicago Fire.
Yes.
Very
money
good.
And mimosas. Thank you very much.
Mimosas all day, baby. Joe, thank you very much indeed for your contributions here.
And to you, sir.
Taylor Rockwell, pleasure as always, my good man.
Pleasure was mine, my friend. Commiserations to Fire supporters. I hope at least us ranting about them and being flummoxed by the decisions they've made is at least therapeutic, hopefully. Maybe. We'll find out.
Hopefully so, but sorry not sorry about the deep dish pizza opinions expressed at the start of this podcast, but Chicago is a beautiful city. Love it very much.
Indeed.
Patreon.com/Total Soccer Show, by the way, if you'd like to support our show. And if you'd like to chat about this episode and all the others on our Discord, please come and do that. Thank you to everybody who has supported us thus far. We'll be back on this feed very shortly, but for now, bye!